Welcome to Onc Live On Air. I'm your host today, Ashley Wehner. Onc Live On Air is a podcast from Onc Live, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, Onc Live covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's episode, sponsored by John Therer Cancer Center, Hackensack University Medical Center, we had the pleasure of speaking with Andre H. Gua, MD, about developments in lymphoma and multiple myeloma management. Dr. Gua is Vice President and Physician-in-Chief of Oncology Care Transformation Services, as well as Chairman and Chief Physician Officer at John Therer Cancer Center at Hackensack University Medical Center in New Jersey, where he also serves as Chief of the Lymphoma Division. He is also the Lydia Fund Chair for Lymphoma and the Academic Chairman of Oncology at the Hackensack Meridian School of Medicine, as well as a Professor of Medicine at Georgetown University in Washington, D.C. In our exclusive interview, Dr. Gua discussed the impact of CAR T-cell therapy on the lymphoma and multiple myeloma treatment paradigms and his anticipations for the future of hematologic oncology. Thank you for joining us today, Dr. Gua. To start our conversation, what has been the significance of the FDA approval of liso-cel for patients with CLL or SLL?
So liso-cel was approved based on a transient study in CLL. It's interesting to remember that one of the first observations of CAR T was actually on CLL patients, three patients published in New England and updated a couple of years ago with a 10-year follow-up who had two deficient that were still in remission and still detectable CAR T cell. So this is the area of unmet need in CLL where CAR T-cell therapy had not really been that successful so far. It is in a double refractory patient who have failed BTK inhibitors available and also failed BCL2 inhibitor. And so this is approved in that context. And this is offering an option, maybe around 40% so far with the follow-up that we have at this point. But this is really important as the only way in that setting that you could potentially cure CLL would have been an allo transplant, which obviously the risk of GVH in an older population where more than half of the patients have chronic GVH.
How have ide-cel and cilta-cel impacted the field of multiple myeloma management?
Our multiple myeloma division here was very instrumental at John Therer Cancer Center in the approval of these BCMA-targeted CAR T-cell therapy. And cilta-cel seems to have a longer PFS and deeper response. A lot of these patients, CAR T and myeloma, that were all penta-refractory, achieve very deep response, including MRD negative, but surprisingly somewhat, even MRD negative patients tend to relapse pretty quickly. So that raised the paradigm of the question that, and there are many other studies addressing this on what's the role of CAR T earlier lines of therapy, where better T-cell fitness, which is a common, phenomenon or topic, if I would say, across CAR T-cell in general, but particularly myeloma, and this patient have been, heavily pretreated. Combination study also that are ongoing and in CAR T in multiple myeloma, as well as other targets besides BCMA, will be also very interesting to see if we have a long-term good outcome in this patient and offering, hopefully a one-and-done solution. Another approach in the comment maybe in this CAR T in myeloma is that the potential benefit in the future as a consolidation after induction and maybe further cytokine reduction with transplant.
How has the label update for axi-cel in large B-cell lymphoma impacted your practice?
Axi-cel in large cell lymphoma is approved as second line based on the ZUMA-7 trial. Liso-cel is approved based on the transform study as well that was in second line. And in this population that was in the context of eligible for high-dose therapy by definition, who particularly in ZUMA-7 had very high-risk disease, early failures, it more than doubled the EFS and the CR rate. And there's also a benefit in survival on the ZUMA-7 trial. And that becomes a standard of care. The question is for early relapse within 12 months of maintenance therapy. The question is that what is the role, the residual role of transplant in that setting? And we all know that in early failures, there was no real benefit. But in the patients who are more than 12 months, who achieve a CR and still transplant eligible, the debate is out there that these patients should still be translated. I think that what is interesting in this data is that in the second line setting, the CR rate was much higher in it, obviously, than third line, and even more in as a consolidation in ZUMA 12 study, because patients are treated earlier with CAR T cell therapy. There's very few late relapses and potentially this patient cured. And the data in the real world in general on CAR T shows confirmed all the clinical trials observation.
The 2023 ASH annual meeting included findings from the expanded access ZUMA 18 trial of Brexucel in patients with relapsed refractory B-cell malignancies. What next steps would you like to see with this agent in this population?
Brexucel on ZUMA 18, this was an expanded access pending in the full approval. So a patient that was typically not qualified for the clinical trial and patient with more comorbidities, older, more heavily pretreated, typical classic picture in that setting, right? The response rate and CR rate was very similar with the follow-up that we had at that time that was also confirming the activity of Brexucel. What's interesting in Brexucel is that in population from the ZUMA 2 trial, right, that was heavily pretreated, having all failed chemoimmunotherapy and BTK inhibitors, about 40%, 35-40% of patients long-term are really doing really well. We actually had an update of 4 years at ASH, where 45% of these patients were still alive at 4 years, and the median duration of CR was over 55 months. So this is really impressive in a patient who achieved a CR, and particularly after 2 years, there were only really rare relapses, and potentially a significant proportion of these patients are cured. The question is that on how we do better than this, right? Problem in CAR T in general, particularly in aggressive lymphoma and mantle cell, is still the early failures. That's where we have to do better. So in the ZUMA 22 trial that is looking, there was a cohort with avutinib naive patients. That's going to be interesting. The results are still pending. And there's some really interesting data we're combining when the patient who had been pre-exposed to avutinib before their collection and after their treatment have really had a much higher amplification of CAR T cells and better outcome. So this has led to the TARMAC trial that was based on LISO, where it almost doubled the CR rate, and then the trial is ongoing. So I think that those are things that one example of the things, and I'm sure we'll discuss more today on how we can do better than this. So Brexucel is no question in patients who have a high-risk disease and early relapse have failed BTK inhibitors and chemotherapy. That's the best treatment at this point.
What does the future look like for integrating bispecific antibodies and cell therapy into clinical practice?
Well, there's a lot of things in the pipeline. It's very busy. There's already several bispecifics approved. And the big question that comes more than the regulatory, the big question that comes is that now that we have a let's say large cell lymphoma, so many novel therapies approved, right, in a relapse of the setting, what is the best sequence of this? So we don't have yet great data, but none of these therapies outside CAR T cures anyone. So in patients who have an early relapse, I think CAR T cell therapy is still the best way to do. And you can do this in patients who are not transplant eligible in the clinical trial analysis, both from the subset of elderly patients who would not have been transplant eligible, or from the real-world data show that in elderly, the CR rate is the same, the outcome is the same. And so this patient can actually do this. And typically, you use more liso-cel based on axi-cel in elderly patients. But I have seen myself, patient with high-grade lymphoma, 80-plus years old, getting CAR-T and doing really well. So I think this is the sequence is a real answer, a question. The bispecific is starting to obviously take a lot of space. As part of the T-cell engaging therapy, it's off the shelf, it's easier, it's a little bit more toxic than we tend to perceive from clinical trials in a real-world setting. And then it's a much more durable treatment, right, and more toxicity over time. We don't have enough follow-up to see if we really cure anyone. I think that one of the questions that was discussed at ASH is that, is it better to do CAR-T first and bispecific afterwards or vice versa? Well, the data that we have at this point, the bispecific seem to have maybe a better place after failing CAR T therapy. One of the questions that comes often is the bispecific question. And the bispecific are providing impressive response rate even in patients who fail CAR T therapy. There are several of them that are approved in follicular, in large cell, not in mantle yet. I think that I really like the concept. And I think they're a little bit more toxic than we sometimes perceive. And it's a more durable treatment, or more constrained, if you want. But where I see the role, because I get this question all the time, I see the role in the combination setting with chemotherapy and the frontline was consolidation in MRD-positive patients, or in a replacement of chemotherapy in the patients who are not came from chemotherapy or even follicular lymphoma. I think moving upfront, the bispecific really will be very exciting. And the other aspect is the only thing that cures large lymphoma mantle cell in a relapse or setting against is CAR T cells. And we need as a community, and there's some work has been published, but not yet usable clinically as much, on how we predict the patients who are on 40% on this long-term curve. Because then we can focus in a community to have our colleagues refer patients, these 60% of patients that are not going to do well with CAR T, to refer them for the next generation of cell therapy or other combination, and provide better options for our patients as early as possible. And there's one key word that I think that is clinical trials matter, obviously, and refer patients early in a context of relapse in malignancies, particularly lymphoma, but also other diseases as well, is very critical. Because if you look at the CR rate and the outcome, looking at axi-cel from third, second to first line, we went from a CR rate to 56% to 85% in a consolidation in ZUMA 12. So it speaks for itself that if you do it early, the outcome is better. So we need to apply all this education.
In 2024, you reached 10 years of chairing PER's Winter Hematologic Cancer Congress. What has it been like to chair this meeting for a decade, and how have you seen this meeting change to align with the evolving hematologic cancer treatment paradigms?
Maybe 5 points that I would summarize around this. That the first one is that obviously we had a big COVID interruption, but we're starting to see really a momentum and people wanting to attend, because there's nothing that replaces a face-to-face interaction with the expert. I think the last 2 years have been very obvious this way. There's a lot more questions, a lot more discussion. And beyond the breaks, we spend more time at the QA and having maybe even less presentation, but having more time for making interactive. So I think this is very rich because it creates a conversation. And by definition, people who are engaged retain more of the information. That's the first aspect. The second aspect that I would say is that acceleration of innovation in terms of novel therapy. Years ago, when I went into the field of oncology, I went into this because I thought it was going to be the most dynamic specialty and addressing the most important challenge with cancer. I didn't expect it would move that fast, but we have seen this continue over the last 10 years with replacement of chemotherapy with combination biological therapy. We talk about T-cell engagers, and CAR T-cell therapy has really dramatically changed things and going to continue to completely revolutionize the way we think of cancer in terms of tools. The third thing that I would say is that the exponential acceleration of genomics and liquid biopsies that have really dramatically changed the landscape and really making precise medicine now a concept that is reality, up to the point that now we are able to have entire conferences dedicated to precision medicine approach, which we would not have done years ago. One of the four aspects that I would say is that when you look at the overall landscape, when we started 10 years ago to say, maybe 8 years ago to say we should have a dedicated symposium on CAR T and cell therapy, and we had a couple of hours of talks, and now we have to do a whole day, and it's not enough to talk about T-cell engaging therapy, and that's a very exciting place to be. And then the last piece that I would say is that as a consequence of all this innovation, there's an increasing need of education, more precise medicine and data to answer the only two questions that matter in medicine. What's my best option now? And what's the best sequence of care? And I think as part of the next phase, if you want, in this conference, having the ability to answer some of these questions and partner with the community and academic medicine as well, to really answer this question, what's the best sequence of care? We go over the conference and then try to filter what matters out of all what's going on, and then try from the eyes of an expert what is the implication for practitioners to guide them, but this is overwhelming information, and they still need at the point of care some kind of ways to try to rationalize the treatment decision that we make. So overall, a very exciting landscape, and we make more and more resistant patients over time as we have all these novel therapies, so we raise more challenges for more education.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of Enclave On Air, sponsored by John Therer Cancer Center, Hackensack University Medical Center. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.enclave.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. Enclave is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at Enclave. On Facebook, like us at Enclave, and follow our Enclave page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of Enclave On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms, so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you are there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to Enclave On Air.